Hey there, welcome to Sauce and Bomb Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, head of growth at Sauce Groups. You'll require buying wonderful sauce businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. And today with me is Tony, founder of Busca, online presence monitoring tool for startups, SMBs, and entrepreneurs. Welcome.
Well, thanks a lot for having me.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, it's great to see you again. We saw each other in Paris for B2B Rocks. So I feel like, you know, every time you kind of like know a person, it's a totally different level of a story. So I know it a little bit, and obviously we've had a chat before. So I'm really, really ready to dive deeper into what you're doing, how you're doing it. But before going there, maybe a little bit about your background.
Okay, I'll try to make it short because there's a lot of stuff. So basically, I started my career working in the music industry. I was an entrepreneur booking concerts around the world for jazz musicians from France and from abroad, like John McLaughlin, who was a guitar player who played with Miles Davis. And I did that first as an employee, then as my own company for 5 years. Then I moved into the bank industry, where I wanted to work in product and innovation, but here in France, you have to do sales before you can do anything else. So I did that. I started as a customer support. And within 3 years, I moved from customer support to account executive for big companies, like enterprise level companies, which I did for 3 years also. And then I had the opportunity of becoming head of product for B2B companies for a French bank, Franco-Portuguese bank, actually, which I led a team of 4 PMs for three years, and then got into the startup world, first as a bank advisor, and then I joined Lemlist, big French scale-up who you had a G on the podcast a while ago, and did that for a year, and then launched Busca, my own SaaS, so a year ago now, and I work also on AI, and I do coaching for B2B entrepreneurs who want to start their business. And mostly I help them understand how to launch an MVP that people want to buy.
That's awesome. Well, first of all, why did you move from, you know, jazz concerts to B2B SaaS?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Actually, I was always fascinated by tech early on when I was a teenager. I did some programming, which was like a long time ago before almost the internet. So it was a long time ago, but then life has its ways. And so I moved to Portugal with my family and then came back to France a few years later and got this opportunity to go into the music business, which I loved because I was a big fan of music. And then get into it. The thing is that in that kind of world, aside from all the appeal of the traveling around the world and five-star hotels and big venues with 10,000s of people, it's my job was basically sales. And the thing is that since it's a small world, basically every year you call the same people again saying, hey, I have a new gig for you. I have a new artist. And it was interesting and I love the music, but the business itself was very repetitive. And unless you manage to, I don't know, end up managing U2 or Coldplay and big bands, you end up always doing kind of the same thing. And at that time I was around 20-ish, and I wanted something more, and intellectually I wanted more, and I wanted something related to tech. So that's why I moved away. And since I had a background in economics that I had studied, I went into the banking industry thinking, okay, there's something to do here with product. And I remember deciding to go into the banking industry. I had to go through sales, but my thought was a book by Brett King, who's an entrepreneur in fintech, who said banking is not something somewhere you go, is something you do. And the idea was to embed banking into day-to-day activities. And that spoke to me. And actually, it relates to SaaS today, which is don't sell a feature, sell an outcome. And to me, back then, it was 12 years ago now. And that's something that resonated with me. And that's something I wanted to do. So it took me 12 years, but here I am today, finally doing that.
Exactly. Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, I think it's always like that, right? Like people who are moving from service to SaaS think that, hey, this is just a money-making machine that makes money when you sleep. So it's always something that you want to see But okay, so what's Busca? Maybe you can tell me a little bit more and, you know, who you're working with and what is the problem that you're solving.
Yeah, sure. So busca, so it comes, the name comes from the Portuguese verb buscar, which means search. And there's a K. Normally in the word there's a C, but we made it a K. Why? Because K is for keyword. And what's the idea behind that is that, put it very simply, it's to help B2B sales teams and lead gen agencies find more qualified leads through social intent data qualifications. What does that mean? Is that basically when we build the company, when he had the idea for the company, my co-founder and I, we both had our own ventures. He had his own app in the past. And the problem that we were facing is that at the time we couldn't find a way to know who talked about us or our brands or what we did online. So you could use Google Alerts. Obviously, there were always that, but it was very limited and we wanted to use LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, etc. So we decided to build our own tool. After a while doing product research, we found out that there were already companies doing the same thing, but they were targeting enterprise and big ventures. And our goal was really SMBs and companies like us. And so that's why we built it. And the idea is that you put any keyword into Busca and we're going to find almost in real time everyone that's mentioning it online on every social platform. What's the idea behind that is that if someone is talking about your brand, obviously they're interested in you, but also if they're talking about a topic or something that's related to your business, it means that they're aware of what you can do or what you can solve for them. And so they're more likely to engage with you and they are more qualified or warmer in terms of lead generation as someone that you do cold outreach to. So that's what we do. And that's what the tool does. Basically, it's not rocket science. There's some heavy tech behind it to find the mentions, but the idea is really simple, is to help you find people who are interested in what you have to sell when they're ready to buy from you.
Yeah, that makes sense. About what you just said, like there are some competitors that serve bigger companies and really go after enterprise. And that makes sense, right? Like, I mean, even now, a lot of companies are moving up market. And the reason is very simple, right? There is just more money. So ever since, you know, I got into SaaS, it was always about making a decision like who you're going after, because you're going after startups, you have to take them over with the volume, right? You have to have so many more customers to justify the economics. So yeah, I mean, I guess that's the question, like why did you decide that this is the market, the very difficult market that you're going after?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And I've worked as a banker with enterprise, so I know basically how it works. One of the first reasons that going after enterprise is obviously the main goal, because with one client, you get a huge budget for your company. The difference, and many companies that want to go to enterprise often forget about that, is that the sales cycle is so much longer. I mean, it takes, while a startup can go on Busca today and click on the button and sign up and get the app today for a reasonable price, you know that in enterprise, you take months because you have tons of people and stakeholders to convince. And also because they have many requests, and going enterprise is almost like one app for one client, because every enterprise has their own needs and specific needs. So obviously it makes much more money, but you have to be structured in a way that you can, if you're bootstrapped like we are and like you guys do, what you guys do is you need to take into account that you're going to take months before you can sign one client. So meanwhile, what do you do? I mean, if you have the cash, that's good. But if you don't, that's a problem. So the first reason why we didn't go after enterprise was that one, is that because sales cycle are so long with enterprise. So going after small companies obviously allows you to do self-serve, product-led growth, etc. But the other thing is that, as you mentioned, there are other competitors that do enterprise, but their focus is really about reporting, trend analysis, and it's marketing purposed companies. Basically, what they're going to do is that you have Coca-Cola that's doing a marketing campaign, and they want to see where people talk about it on Twitter, on LinkedIn, etc., and Facebook, and where they talk the most so they can put more effort, etc. So what those companies are selling is trends and reports analytics, and they have great dashboards and lots of reports. But I was talking to an expert about that. He says, those companies are great to sell you reports that nobody's going to read, but that feel good for the client because he has a report and he knows what it does. And actually, our goal was to first go after marketing teams for SMBs like those companies do for enterprise. And that's an interesting point about building a SaaS, is that we realized that the people that we talk to, when we spent like half an hour with the head of marketing explaining the need and the benefits for them, they said, okay, it's great, let's buy it. But the problem is, because we price low and we don't target big companies, we can't afford to spend half an hour with everyone. So we had a problem that was a real problem to solve, which was find more qualified leads and find what people tell about you. But we had a target that was not aware of what we did, was not aware of the pain that we were trying to solve. It's what Pierre Rubel calls vitamins versus painkillers. And for marketing teams, we were a vitamin. Coming from sales, I realized at some point, okay, so it's going to take a lot of effort to go after marketing teams. So what about going after lead gen and sales teams? And for a sales team, finding a qualified lead is a big pain. And it's obvious for them that if I can give you something to find a qualified lead instead of spending 10 hours sending emails out of the blue without knowing the results, you're going to be interested. And that's what we did. We pivoted the positioning. And so that's why today SMBs are very interesting what we do, because for them, it's obvious that we can solve their problem. And so it's easier for us to sell them. Whereas again, enterprise, we're going to, even if it's a real pain for them too, it's going to take a lot longer to convince them to buy our tool. It's not just about the money. It's also about the sales cycle and how you can convince people to buy your product when you don't have money to spend on ads and tons of money to bring awareness to the problem you're solving.
Yeah, that's true. That's super interesting. All right. And you had like this super cool story of how you actually got it to, you know, to people and started showing it to potential users and customers. And you did it in what, like 45 days, right? You've launched and published it on Product Hunt. And because again, I know a little bit of how you did it, like you leveraged AI and the free trials out there, which is, I think, is super resourceful. So I guess let's start there. So with the free trials, what I'm really interested in is, you know, because a lot of people are trying to launch their tools. What was kind of like the ultimate list of tools that really helped you take it public in such a short period of time?
Okay, great. Yeah, that's very interesting. And yeah, as you say, because you have to be scrappy when you're starting from scratch, I couldn't afford to spend a lot of money on tools, etc. So I like applied to every free trial and created accounts to use free trials on companies that I used. And so about the tools coming from outreach, from sales and using Lemlist a lot, basically I focused on the outreach tools, which was Lemlist, Apollo, and Le Gros Machine, which is also a company like Lemlist, with complementary tools. And those are the main tools that I used, aside from ChatGPT, that helped me actually do the marketing and the branding and the messaging for the app. But the key tools were really outbound tools. Why? Because the idea, as you said, we launched in 45 days, and the idea was to build a community as fast as possible and engage people to know about what we did, to convince them to join. So for that, again, since I don't have ads, I didn't have a big network at the time, and I didn't have any referrals to justify what I did, outreach was the only solution for me. So using those tools was the best way to get in front of people as fast as possible. Then applying what I'd learned from Guillaume and at Lemlist was easy for me to do quite sharp messaging and find the right people. But those are mainly the tools like Le Gros Machine, Lemlist, Apollo. Most of those tools that you can use for outreach that luckily for us are free trials were tools we used to help us get to that point and achieve like 700 people that voted for us on Product Hunt the day we launched.
Yeah. And when we had our interview with Guillaume, he was actually so proud. He was like, yeah, you can see people who came from Lemlist on LinkedIn. Like they're very prominent. We really do everything to make sure that they know how to sell basically and how to sell their products if they start working on something. So that's a great experience, I guess. Let's talk about AI, right? Because you said also it helped you with the messaging, with the content, and, you know, there is all this debate going on, like use AI, don't use AI. Like I had a conversation with a friend who started to become super active on LinkedIn, and he posts frequently every day. There is lots of engagement. He comments on a ton of posts, and it's, you know, it's working. don't get me wrong, it's working perfectly, right? People are engaged, and it's interesting to see so much of what he's doing. But you also know that it's AI. Like, it's not refined just yet to be like, I know he's going to listen to this and laugh, but I'm not going to name any names, right? But still, like, how did you work with AI? Because obviously you became, I think, product of the day or number three.
Number three on Product Hunt.
So it was a compelling copy, and it was, you know, a good message that people loved. So it was, you know, human enough. How did you leverage AI for this?
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's a topic I talk a lot because I launched my own newsletter about AI for product and marketing teams. So every week I share a use case. So I know about the struggles, and that's something I do even teaching about. We must keep in mind that, I mean, it's like saying AI and not AI is like, okay, would you use a calculator or do you use a piece of paper to do math? I mean, today you're going to use a calculator because it's easier and it's simpler, but you're not going to use a calculator to figure out, I don't know, a cooking recipe. So it's a tool, and you just have to use it for what it is, which is a tool. And about the content creation, it's like the 101 of using AI today, which is you give it something, a topic, and it generates text. But again, we must keep in mind that it's a probabilistic system, which means that it's going to give you what most people, based on its training, will give you. So it's going to be effective. It's going to be sort of relevant, but it's going to be generic. So you have to use it to, how I use it is I use it to create drafts and to give me ideas, suggestions, and then build my own from that. You can use also structures, which is like I use like 100 hooks for posts that I have put into the AI, and it gives me back when I say, give me 5 posts about this topic that I'm sharing with it. Then I choose the ones that I like and adapt it always. So that's how I use it. That's how I use it to build the brand. One great use that I had, for example, is we built a video, a promotional video for the Product Hunt. And I said, find me a quote that's relevant about what I'm doing. And he came with this quote from Warren Buffett that I hadn't heard about at the time, which is, it takes 20 years to build a reputation and five seconds to ruin it. And it was a great intro because it meant, okay, so find out what people tell about you online so that you can save your reputation. If I didn't have AI, I probably would not have used that and not have that impact. So that's why it's useful, because it gives you hints, it gives you inspiration, but you have to use it as a tool and not as a means to an end. Even though today with ChatGPT, it has memory, meaning that, for example, I told it what I do with Bosca, etc. So now when I say something and I ask something, it gives you something that's really relevant and tailored to my needs because it knows about me, but always refine it. And what you say about post online, I mean, I can spot AI comments a mile away because it's always about unlocking the power of something and enhancing something in the digital world. It's always the same words that come often. But yeah, use it as a tool, as an inspiration. One way I use it, for example, for content creation is I fed it with Justin Welch's posts and topics and frameworks, the PAPES framework, gave it 100 different hooks. And now when I have a topic, I say, give me 5 posts about it. It uses the way Justin Welch does his stuff. And then I adapt it to my own tone.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, for inspiration, absolutely. And obviously, like, we had a bit of an argument, like, dude, don't AI comment me. And it's like, wait, but that's the future. And like, yeah, but, you know, live a little, like, be human, you're still human. So yeah, for inspiration, for brainstorming, completely agree. And I mean, what AI can do already is just completely mind-blowing. We're actually going to have a webinar about the way we use AI at SaaS Group, and it's like, seriously, it's like nothing I've ever seen before. It's crazy. But okay, I think one more question that I have, because you mentioned it already too, you've launched a newsletter, and also you've had some stellar growth there, which is amazing. And you know, I've talked to so many founders who wanted to launch a newsletter or launched and wanted to make it work. And you got over 1,500 subscribers in 6 months, yeah, which is pretty great.
Yeah, 6 months.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you do it?
Well, again, it always comes back to doing outreach, etc. But about the newsletter, about the Bosca, about everything actually I do, even looking for a job. Last year I looked for a job, and I shared it on a podcast that I applied to 60 companies and got 20 processes, was like a 33% rate, success rate from that. Why it works? Because today everything, no matter how unsexy it is sales related, because even when you even dating, you have to sell yourself to someone. And it's that famous Omosi quote, which is sales is a transfer of belief on a bridge of trust, meaning that if you understand that's how you approach people, no matter what you're building, being a SaaS or a newsletter. And for the newsletter, just like I did with Bosca, the idea was, how can I bring trust to people to join me and accept that I'm an expert in AI. So what I did was use outreach. Obviously, we created a community. We created a community instead of selling a newsletter, which was obviously a very important. It's like instead, hey, we have a newsletter, join the newsletter. Just saying, hey, we have a community, we want you to be a part of it. Just that makes a lot of difference in terms of psychology and the way people receive the information. Plus, when you tell them it's free, obviously, it's even easier. But how I did to grow is, again, use outreach tools like I had before with Lemonist, a gross machine, etc., and use AI. We're talking about AI to do a lot of scraping and gross hacking. Meaning, I asked AI to help me create a script on go to Substack, which is where we have a newsletter. Find me every extract every information about every newsletter about product management. From that, I identified that every email on Substack had the same structure. So I said, okay, you have the name of the author in the database that it created, create the email addresses. And then from that, I sent emails to all those people. So it was like 1,000 people. And from that, I got subscribers and I got recommendations from those people, which now accounts for 1/3 of our growth, which is like we have 40 newsletters recommending us. And that's basically how we grew from zero to 1,500 in 6 months, which is doing outreach, selling people in a community, not just a product per se. And then doing a lot of gross hacking to find scrappy ways to get in touch with people.
That's pretty cool. Thanks for sharing that. I think a lot of people who hear that will want to, you know, do a little bit of that. So great. Okay. I wanted to ask, you know, a little more about your personal journey, because it's your first company, right? And before that, you worked for Lemlist, and, you know, the team at Lemlist seems to be very happy. I mean, I do follow G on Instagram and on LinkedIn, and, you know, he always posts like everything they were doing together and, you know, all the like cool initiatives. So leaving Lemlist, you know, really like jumping the gun and building your own company. How did you come to this decision? Why did you think it was time? And yeah, what was kind of maybe the biggest challenge for you, even like in the mindset?
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Sure. That's a great question. One of the first reasons to make the jump at this point with, because I'm much older than anyone in Lemlist. I mean, I'm even older than G, so I'm one of the old people there. But what you say is because since I left, I think like three or four people, including head of product, Simon, the head of revenue, etc., left also to build their own company. So there was like a move. I don't know what made it that in terms of time, everyone left around the same period. But yeah, there was a move, like many people left to build their own thing. And I think that's Gis obviously is very inspirational about doing, being an entrepreneur. And as you talk to him and you know, and what he does online, he's always sharing about being an entrepreneur. I had been an entrepreneur in the past, a long time ago in the music business. And I think being an entrepreneur to me is like an urge that you have. It's not something that you, if you want, if you just wake up one morning and say, hey, I want to be an entrepreneur because G's life is cool or whatever, or I want to be Jeff Bezos or whatever, that's not a good way to go, because obviously you have to change your mindset. Because one of the things that I had when I started Bosca and being an entrepreneur as a freelancer also, is that often when you come from the being an employee, you have like the ghost boss problem, which is you work for yourself as if there was someone above you still, because you're used to that. And what it makes is that since you don't have anyone to tell you what to do, sometimes you get crippled. And in your day, when you're doing stuff, you feel like a mouse in a wheel running around and not accomplishing anything. And sometimes you give up, sometimes you feel stressed. And so that's the biggest challenge, was to overcome that employee posture and really take the full entrepreneurship with its good and bad sides and move on from there. But to me, yeah, the fact to move from being an employee to an entrepreneur was really an urge and a real need that you feel like, okay, I need, plus at the time of life, I really feel like I want to build something on my own. And I feel like I need that. I like being an employee and it's a great company where I was at, but still it's not, I don't feel fulfilled and I really need that. Which means like I really want to not sleep at night and always be thinking about my business and losing time with friends, etc. Because that's the reality of entrepreneurship. But I need that to be happy in the future.
Yeah. Also, super interesting. Okay. Well, you know, also one thing that is very much curated in Lemlist, and this is something that I do see from you a lot, is that you're very prominent in social media. Like you literally know how to sell your ideas and your own, you know, build your own brand, and that is great. But I feel like, you know, for a lot of people, and tell me if it's relevant to your story too, if you're a first-time founder and you go on social media, you go on LinkedIn, where it's only the, you know, the rainbows and butterflies, it's only the success stories, you have a bit of an imposter syndrome to like start talking about certain things and go into that, you know, thought leadership, right? It sounds scary. So yeah, was it anything relevant to you? And if yes, then how did you overcome this?
Yeah, I know it was totally relevant. Plus, when you work in product management, the imposter syndrome is something you have a lot, because unlike other parts of a company, a developer, a marketer, a designer, you have little to show for that's really tangible compared to other people in the company. So you always have that thing of, okay, I'm doing things, but is it really me? Is it others? What am I bringing to the table compared to others? So you have that kind of feeling. And yeah, starting on social media, talking about entrepreneurship and what I did, yeah, you have that. And plus you have the FOMO because you see people talking or spending all their time there and having great results. So you say, okay, I have to post every day, etc. And you see, as you said, it's all rainbows and everybody having living their best life in Bali and working like 10 hours a month and making $10,000, which is the LinkedIn minimum salary. So it was difficult at first, but I want to focus on just showing what I can do, my expertise, and focus on growing how I grow my business with the pros and cons and the good and bad times. But focus just on sharing what I know in terms of building a product, building a community, etc., and not go into the inspirational stuff and thought leadership. Because there's this phrase from, I don't remember his name, but it says, it's not imposter syndrome, it's just that you're not good enough yet. When you're starting, you're not good. So you're not, you're a student trying to be a teacher. And that's when people feel that it's fake. And that's when you end up at some point, the castle, the house of cards falls apart, because people realize that you're just full of shit and that you're just selling something you're not. Guillaume, for example, obviously, I could write posts like Guillaume, because again, I could take all his posts and write something similar, but that wouldn't make sense because it would be, it's not fake it until you make it. It's just, it would be fake because it's not where I am in the journey. So it's too, I'm a student, or like, let's say I'm not a junior, but I'm a sophomore year of learning entrepreneurship. So I should talk about that and at that level of my journey and not trying to be inspirational saying you should work this way, you should apply this framework, etc. No, it's just, here is what I did. This is the results that I got. If you want, here's how you can use it for yourself. And that's pretty much it. But I don't want to go, thought leadership is not, I'm not a leader, or I don't feel like a leader. So I just share my own journey where I'm at the moment. And that's pretty much all I can do. And I think that's what makes you genuine and makes you relevant for other people.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that we discussed recently here on the podcast is also the fact that a lot of, especially first-time founders, fall into that trap of thought leadership of everybody else. So like, there are a lot of loud voices that tell you how to do things exactly. And, you know, if you're not doing that, then, you know, what are you doing? And yeah, I was wondering, like, you know, so many different opinions out there, you know, VCs are irrelevant, or bootstrapping is too difficult, or, you know, PLG is crap and like everyone's moving up market. Boom. Like, who do you listen to? So how to stay, how to stay sane in that? Like, how do you find, you know, your peace of mind in this whole like whirlwind of LinkedIn posts?
Yeah, that's an interesting topic. And I read about someone talking about that the other day. And also in product, you have also that same thing, like use this framework, it's going to be bad. And there's this new thing that you should do because that's the way to go. And for lead gen, for example, look at our B2B, you have to have a visitor tracking system, you have to use this, and you get that FOMO and it becomes overwhelming. So what I had that at some point, like trying to run after something that you could never achieve. What I do now is basically I just have a list of people that I follow, and I have a saved list. I go on LinkedIn, I see their posts are saved, and I engage with them and see what they have to say. And then I cut off and just go on LinkedIn sometimes to scroll around, but just lightly and not like scroll everything, because again, everyone has an opinion and everyone has their say. But to me, the thing is that, yeah, cold email is dead. VC founding is crap. Bootstrap is life. 2 years ago, it was the other way around. Every company is different and you have to just do what works for you. The same thing about posting on social media. Everyone says you have to go on LinkedIn to get clients. That is not true. It is true for if you work in B2B SaaS. I have an example. I had a founder who wanted to build like a Lemlist-like tool for nurses. And he wanted to reach out to nurses and medical people. And he wanted to do something on LinkedIn until he realized that actually those people don't go on LinkedIn, they go on Facebook. So if you want to find clients, yeah, you can go on LinkedIn if your target is there. If they're not there, go where they are. Same for the frameworks of building a product. Yes, you should do an MVP and ship fast and iterate if you're doing a B2B SaaS. But if you're building OpenAI, you cannot ship fast and iterate. You have to take years of development. So I came to this realization that, yeah, there are a lot of frameworks. It's good to be knowledgeable about what exists, but then turn off LinkedIn and social media and focus on what you have and how you can solve your specific problem, and then use whatever you want, but focus on that, and then go on social media and share your experience and how you did and what you used for your own experience, but not saying this is what you should do because this is what works. No, this is what worked for you. It doesn't work for others. Lemlist is a good example of that. Marketing and founder-led growth worked for Lemlist with Guillaume at the time. Now they reached the point with 28 million ARR that they want to go off market as well, that they're doing sales as other companies, because, and until recently, Guillaume was not advocating for that because he didn't need that at this point in his company. Now he does, because companies grow, companies change, and the market changes, and you have to adapt. But it's your own company at a certain point that you have to focus on specifically and not fall for the trap of the gurus that sell you because gurus always try to convince you to buy their method, and they're the ones making the money, not you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Jason Fried, DHH, I mean, they're super vocal, right? And they obviously do have, you know, something that they are advocating for. But one thing that I absolutely support, like Jason always talking about, is the fact that it's your company and it's just you to figure it out and, you know, and decide for yourself what to do. And I feel like that should be on repeat for a lot of people. But okay, I just have a couple more questions for you. First of all, you know, where are you now with Busca and what's next for it?
Yeah, great. So now we pivoted again from marketing to sale to lead gen a few months ago. So now we're growing that. We're building integrations with La Grosse Machine. We're working on Lemlist, Clay to integrate them natively in our app to grow faster and to get more clients. So our goal now is really to keep focusing on growing organically, reaching more and more sales teams and lead gen agencies and lead gen companies. And then once we reach a certain level, in the next 6 months or so, then maybe like do a fundraising, not because we need to, because we're profitable, but because that would help us, like what I was saying, bring more awareness about what we do to other people. And that comes with ads, that come with marketing. And at some point you need some budget if you want to grow further a certain point, which is our case. So at some point we'll see to grow there. But the idea is really to grow organically because it's only been a few months since we've pivoted. We have like 5 to 10 new people signing up every day. And then it's also to work on increasing the conversion rate on those people who sign up for free trials and see how we can convert them more. And then obviously focus on improving the tool using AI mostly because since it's text-based, it's easy to use AI to make it better. But the idea is that grow organically from and achieve 10 to 15K revenue every month, and then think of maybe fundraising, or if we find a way to grow organically, even without fundraising, even better.
Yeah, fascinating. Okay, I'll be happy to talk to you next year to see where you're at in this journey. But so far, you know, what's the biggest win and the biggest failure? Can be for you as a founder or for the company, for the product.
Well, the biggest failure was not to pivot earlier, basically, which is like we focused on, because it's always fall in love with the problem, but as a first-time founder, you always fall in love with the solution. And it took, I could have said like 3 months or maybe 3 or 4 months time if I had accepted to pivot earlier, but I didn't see what was there to see. I was blinded by being my own company, a first-time founder. So that's the biggest failure. Like not, although it's something that I teach people not to do, I did it myself, obviously, was not to pivot earlier because it would have saved time. We could have gone even faster because obviously since 4 months is the lead time to other companies to build competition for us on SM Micro. So that would be the biggest failure and the biggest win. Well, that would be to see that Busca or the newsletter or even working as a freelancer has been successful to me in terms of not only revenue and money making, but fulfilling myself as a person and doing what I love and waking up every morning stressed out a lot, but happy to be stressed because to work on stuff that I want and being stressed because I want to make the best out of my company, my newsletter, and my freelance business. And yeah, that's the biggest win because we're talking about imposter syndrome. That's the and you being an employee. You're always there thinking, okay, why can I bring, is it, am I good enough for this? And so you work a lot and seeing that there are people interesting and I get testimonials and people saying they're happy with what I do with Busca or the newsletter or else, that's the biggest win for me for now.
That's pretty cool. It reminds me of the story of Brian Kiesel that I just recently had on the podcast, who also said that, you know what, it just works for me. Like having a portfolio of tools and having a range of like products and services to work on is maybe not right, according to some Twitter gurus, yeah. But it works for me. So that's great. All right. The last question is always about a hack. So anything that works for you, you already shared a couple of hacks with AI, but maybe something else, you know, customer acquisition, content generation, yeah. Whatever.
Well, for customer acquisition, as I said, use AI to build scripts to get more clients. I did one recently for a friend who wanted to reach out to YC founders, but he had to go on the YC directory list, click on each company, then click on the LinkedIn URL, copy them in an Excel sheet. I asked ChatGPT to build a script for me, and basically it just ran on the background alone. And in 30 minutes, he had script 700 direct URLs and names and company names and company URLs of YC founders. So it saved him like 10 hours doing that, just using a ChatGPT prompt. So to me, it's use AI to automate what you can automate to find more clients. If you want to find a list of clients, go where they are. Go on Google, use AI if you don't know, to use what we call Google Docs, which is search for lists of people and certain types of websites on Google. Ask AI to do it. That's how I do it. So yeah, use AI to do automation and lead generation automation. That's a good hack. About content generation, it's not a hack. It's a tip. Don't follow the advice of the gurus that say post every day and go online every day. It's not true. Just again, go where your clients are or potential clients are. Post consistently. And being consistent doesn't mean every day, just means go regularly. Post about what you can do and not what you think other people want you to write about. And in terms of other hacks, use Busker to find clients, obviously. That's the best hack you can have. Other than that, in terms of content, yeah, use if you have people that you like can be G, can be Justin Welch, can be Jason Fried, whatever people that you like, and you want to have the write like them and don't know how, again, you can use AI, like feed AI everything you know about those people and get AI to help you start and draft things and then make it your own. Because one of the things is that when you're a founder, and I've had it myself, you don't know where to start and you feel like, what am I going to talk about? That's going to be crap. Everybody's talking better than me. Okay, so get inspired by other people. Use the tools that we have with AI to draft something based on the people that you admire. And then find a way to make it your own. And then just share your journey and that should be fine.
Those are great hacks. Thank you so much. I feel like I'm going to steal a couple of those too. So there you go. Watch me grow on LinkedIn from now on. But yeah, thank you so much. Comments, please. Yeah. Oh, no. Cringe. All right. Well, thank you so much for the story and, you know, for everything that you've shared. I feel like, you know, it's been a super fun episode. I feel like a lot of people are going to enjoy this. So, like I said, happy to do it again sometime and see where you're at next year.
Sure. Well, thanks a lot for having me. It was great. And yeah, talk soon.
Sure. Absolutely. And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@saas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.